trust that God will continue to have his way in our hearts as we're gathered this morning, as we look into his word. The title of the message that we want to consider this morning is The Superiority of Love. In John 13:34, Jesus tells his disciples of a new commandment. This was after Jesus had washed the disciples' feet. Judas had left the group, and Jesus continued to talk to his disciples there. And he says in verse 34, "A new commandment I give unto you, that ye love one another as I have loved you, that ye also love one another." This morning we are going to try to explore the meaning of this new commandment. But I'd like to turn to Matthew 24 first of all. Here the disciples asked Jesus to tell them about his coming again in the end of the world. And Jesus went on to tell them some of the conditions of the last days. And maybe we'll just begin reading in verse 4. Read down to verse 14 of Matthew 24. "And Jesus answered and said unto them, Take heed that no man deceive you, for many shall come in my name, saying, I am Christ, and shall deceive many. And ye shall hear of wars and rumors of wars. See that ye be not troubled, for all these things must come to pass, but the end is not yet. For nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines and pestilences and earthquakes in divers places. All these are the beginning of sorrows. Then shall they deliver you up to be afflicted, and shall kill you, and ye shall be hated of all nations for my name's sake. And then shall many be offended, and shall betray one another, and shall hate one another. And many false prophets shall rise, and shall deceive many. And because iniquity shall abound, the love of many shall wax cold. But he that shall endure unto the end, the same shall be saved. And this gospel of the kingdom shall be preached in all the world for a witness unto all nations, and then shall the end come." We see in verse 12 that one of the things that will characterize the last days is a love that will wax cold, a love for God that will wax cold. And we know that outside of God, outside of Christ, there is no love. It's not love. Christ is love. So I believe we need to look at this subject with open hearts and minds. We don't want to be among those in the last days who have a love that is growing cold. Jesus said that love will grow cold because iniquity will be abounding. The days we live in are wicked. Many are straying from the truth of the Word of God. And living in wicked times brings many tests of love. In verse 10, Jesus said that some will openly desert the faith, and it will make it hard to love. It says, "And then shall many be offended, and shall betray one another, and shall hate one another. Many will be deceived." Verse 11, "And many false prophets shall rise, and shall deceive many." There will be those who will try to corrupt the faith, saying, "You don't need to do this," or "You don't need to do that." It brings a lot of confusion and tension and stress between people in relationships. But verse 13 says, "But he that shall endure unto the end, the same shall be saved." Amidst all the troubles of this fallen world with wickedness abounding, there is still victory found in Jesus. A love for Jesus that is maintained will directly affect our eternal destiny and also how we relate to others as we journey towards heaven. This morning I would like to spend most of our time in the love chapter, 1 Corinthians 13, and endeavor to understand some of the characteristics of this love that Jesus talks about. And I think we're going to go ahead and read this chapter at this time, 1 Corinthians 13. And verse 1, though I speak with the tongues of men and of angels, and have not charity, I am become as sounding brass or a tinkling cymbal. And though I have the gift of prophecy, and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and though I have all faith, so that I could remove mountains, and have not charity, I am nothing. And though I bestow all my goods to feed the poor, and though I give my body to be burned, and have not charity, it profiteth me nothing. Charity suffereth long and is kind. Charity envieth not. Charity vaunteth not itself, is not puffed up, doth not behave itself unseemly, seeketh not her own, is not easily provoked, thinketh no evil, rejoiceth not in iniquity, but rejoiceth in the truth, beareth all things, believeth all things, hopeth all things, endureth all things. Charity never faileth, but whether there be prophecies, they shall fail. Whether there be tongues, they shall cease. Whether there be knowledge, it shall vanish away. For we know in part, and we prophesy in part. But when that which is perfect is come, then that which is in part shall be done away. When I was a child, I spake as a child. I understood as a child. I thought as a child. But when I became a man, I put away childish things. For now we see through a glass darkly, but then face to face. Now I know in part, but then shall I know even as also I am known. And now abideth faith, hope, charity, these three. But the greatest of these is charity. What is love? Point number one, love is preeminent. If we go back to chapter 12, the previous chapter, it talks about spiritual gifts and how there are so many different gifts. And all these gifts are important. But we come down to verse 31 of chapter 12, and it says, but covet earnestly the best gifts, and yet show I unto you a more excellent way. And then he goes on into chapter 13 and shows what this more excellent way is. He first mentions about the gift of tongues. If a man could speak all the languages on earth with great fluency or talk like an angel and yet be without charity, it would be all empty noise and just useless sound that would neither profit nor inspire anyone. And bringing this even closer home, talking freely or just even eloquently about the things of God, the doctrines, will not save ourselves or profit others if we are destitute of love. It is the charitable heart, not the fluent tongue, that is acceptable with God. The apostle mentions this gift first because it was in this area that the Corinthians seemed to value themselves and despise their brethren in relation to gifts. Love is preeminent. It is superior to or notable above all else. In verse 2, he talks about prophecy and knowledge. If a man had a clear understanding of everything in life, of the prophecies, the types under the old dispensation, and an accurate knowledge of the doctrines of Christianity through the Spirit of God, he would still be nothing if he didn't have love, if he didn't have charity. A clear and deep head is of no significance without a charitable heart. It is not great knowledge that God sets a value upon, but charity, true devotion, and love. He also mentions about faith in verse 2. If I had faith, that utmost degree of faith that I could do big things, move mountains, he mentions here. go into the sea, and it would happen. And if I was still without love, it would profit me nothing. I'm still nothing. Moving mountains would be quite an achievement, wouldn't it? And I think us as men like power. That's part of our carnal nature. We like to be able to do great things. But charity in God's account is of much greater worth. Verse 3 brings it even closer home, talking about outward acts of love. A person could give everything away to the poor, but if he does it without love, it profits him nothing. If he does it with a wrong motive, it profits nothing. There may be an open, lavish hand and not be a liberal, charitable heart. The same with suffering. It's also mentioned in verse 3. A person could be willing to face the worst suffering for some other motive than a love for Christ and his people, and it wouldn't profit him anything. What we are being taught here is love is so vital for the Christian, and perhaps one of the hardest to maintain. In fact, a person can hardly be called Christian without love. Christ is love. And so if Christ is in my life and is in your life, there should be love coming forth from our lives. We could go through life doing all the good things that a Christian should do, but without love, we totally miss it. Love is preeminent, needs to be preeminent in our hearts. Number two, another characteristic of love, love suffers long. We see this in verse 4 here. Does our love have limits? Are we choosy in our love? The scriptures tell us that love will suffer long. The love of God is patient towards all men. It suffers all the weakness, ignorance, errors, and infirmities of the children of God, and all the malice and wickedness that may come from the world. This love has no limits as to how long it suffers. My mind went to Joseph, thinking about his journey as he left his father's house and went to check on his brothers. How they mistreated him. They threw him into a pit and then sold him. And we don't have any record of Joseph responding in any wrong ways. He seemed to suffer all of this with a love for his brethren. Even years later, when his brothers came back for corn, he served them. He loved them. Sometimes for us, the smallest deeds of unkindness can ruffle our feathers. We want to defend. We want to get even. We want to put others in their place. It's our human tendency. But no, love suffers long. Number three, love is kind. This word kind means to be good-natured, gentle, tender, affectionate. Love is gracious. It wishes well. It is not harsh, sour, or gloomy in nature. And of course, we can apply this to all of life, whether it be to our brothers and sisters here, or just our families at home, relating to our children, or children with your brothers and sisters. Under all irritations and ill will from others, love is gentle and mild. It is hatred that prompts harshness, severity, unkindness of expression, anger, and a desire for revenge. A man who truly loves another will be kind to him. He will desire to do him good. He will be gentle, not severe and harsh. He will be courteous because he desires his happiness. He will want to do all he can for his good and not to hurt his feelings in any way. 1 Peter 3, 8-9 says, "Finally, be ye all of one mind, having compassion one of another. Love as brethren, be pitiful, be courteous, not rendering evil for evil, or railing for railing, but contrariwise blessing, knowing that ye are thereunto called, that ye should inherit a blessing." A call to be courteous and compassionate, to give a blessing. How often are we going through the day looking for ways to give a blessing to others? You know, life is not all about me. It's not all about you. It's about reaching out to others, giving that blessing. Ephesians 4:32 is another familiar verse. "And be ye kind one to another, tenderhearted, forgiving one another, even as God for Christ's sake hath forgiven you." We know that God has shown tremendous love and kindness to us, forgiving us. He continues to forgive us over and over again. And yet, who are we not to forgive our brother or sister or family member, whatever it may be, after God has shown such mercy, such tenderness to us? Love does not envy. Love is not grieved at the good of others, their gifts, their good qualities, or their material possessions. If we really love our neighbor, we will be so far from envying his welfare or even being displeased with it, but will rather rejoice with him. Rejoice with those that do rejoice. His joy will become an addition to ours rather than destroying our joy. Someone once said, "The prosperity of those to whom we wish well can never grieve us, and the mind which is bent on doing good to all can never wish ill to another." Do we have that love in our hearts that never wishes evil, never wishes ill will, never envies, but only wishes good on others? Can we really rejoice in the good that our brother is experiencing, or does it grieve us? I think it's good for us to consider. Even though a loving person sees others in a higher and more prosperous condition than himself, he won't allow that to trouble him, but rather he'll be glad at that good and that prosperity of others, no matter how well or how bad life is for himself. Galatians 5:26, "Let us not be desirous of vainglory, provoking one another, envying one another." Stay away from it. Replace it with love. Envy may come by anything in which someone else may excel, or in maybe someone is favored above us. It may come because others have superior wealth, beauty, accomplishments, reputation, or success. A man may be envied simply because he is happy, while we may be miserable, sick, neglected, or overlooked. Man may be envied because he is successful, while we are faced with continual disappointment time after time. Can we still wish good on someone else when what we're facing seems to be disappointment after disappointment, time again? The love of Christ in our hearts will not envy others. Number five, love vaunteth not itself. It's not puffed up. Love has no pride, only humility. They cannot, love and pride cannot coexist. Love is not inflated with a sense of its own importance. Love realizes that it has nothing except what it has received and deserves nothing that it has gotten. True humility arises from a sense of the fullness of God experienced in our hearts. When we love God with all of our heart, soul, mind, and strength, I believe the rest will almost fall into place. Not quite. There will be choices we need to make, determine in our hearts to love, even when the carnal man wants to rise within us. But when we pursue that love for God, we will be amazed how easy it will be to love others, because ourselves are out of the way. We need this fullness of God in our own souls. It will help us to have a right perspective about who we are and who God is. But if I am full of love for myself, I will be most concerned about myself, in protecting myself, and most times it's at the expense of others. Others are hurt. Romans 12:10 says, "Be kindly affectioned one to another with brotherly love, in honor, preferring one another." Okay? So, seeing others as better than we are, or preferring them, putting them before us. These two things go hand in hand. If we truly love our brother, we will honor him above ourselves. We will humbly take the lower position and advance our brother. Number six, love behaves itself wisely is another thing that is mentioned here in these verses, and I'm not sure what all that means. I think we can make some assumptions. Love never acts out of place or character. True love in our hearts gives a guidance effect. As Jesus is Lord of my life, and his love is in my life, then there will be fruit that comes forth that will act in wisdom. 1 Corinthians 9:22, "To the weak became I as weak, that I might gain the weak." This is Paul speaking. "I am made all things to all men, that I might by all means save some." Paul was one who gave up his will, his own will, his own way, his own ease, his own pleasure, and his own profit, that he might somehow save souls or point souls to Christ, help them. Love behaves itself wisely. Love will be willing to sacrifice all to help those who are in need. Love seeks that which is proper or becoming in the circumstances that we encounter in life. Even in the relationships that we have, love will behave itself wisely. We'll seek that proper response every time. We will find ourselves in tough situations that will bring a response out of us. So, what is coming from my life, from your life? You know, in the most difficult, trying situations of life are the greatest opportunities to allow love to rule wisely. Let's choose that. Number seven, love does not seek her own. We talked about this some, but love is never satisfied but in the welfare, comfort, and salvation of all. Love causes a person to see beyond himself and his own wants and needs. 1 Corinthians 10:24 says, "Let no man seek his own, but every man another's wealth." Seeking the good of others, the duty of every Christian is not merely to look on his own profit and pleasure, but to see how he can benefit and serve others in such a way that edifies and promotes holy living. That's what true love does. We want to see our brother exceed or succeed, to grow. A similar verse is found in Philippians 2:4. Look not every man on his own things, but every man also on the things of others. We are called to promote God's glory and the salvation of men, and true love will have a desire to do that. Turn with me to Matthew 25. I'd like to read this account here. Shows us clearly what God's call is upon our lives as his disciples. I'd like for you to notice with me as we read the difference between these two groups of people here. Let's begin reading at verse 31 and read down to the end of the chapter. Then said Jesus unto them, all ye shall be offended because of me this night, for it is written. I think I'm on the right passage here. No, I'm on chapter 26. Sorry, chapter 25 and verse 31. When the Son of Man shall come in his glory and all the holy angels with him, then shall he sit upon the throne of his glory. And before him shall be gathered all nations, and he shall separate them one from another, as a shepherd divideth his sheep from the goats. And he shall set the sheep on his right hand, but the goats on the left. Then shall the king say unto them on his right hand, come, ye blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was an hungered, and ye gave me meat. I was thirsty, and ye gave me drink. I was a stranger, and ye took me in. Naked, and ye clothed me. I was sick, and ye visited me. I was in prison, and ye came unto me. Then shall the righteous answer him, saying, Lord, when saw we thee and hungered and fed thee, or thirsty and gave thee drink? When saw we thee a stranger and took thee in, or naked and clothed thee? Or when saw we thee sick or in prison and came unto thee? And the king shall answer and say unto them, verily I say unto you, inasmuch as ye have done it unto one of the least of these my brethren, ye have done it unto me. Then shall he say also unto them on the left hand, depart from me, ye cursed, into everlasting fire prepared for the devil and his angels. For I was an hungered, and ye gave me no meat. I was thirsty, and ye gave me no drink. I was a stranger, and ye took me not in. Naked, and ye clothed me not. Sick and in prison, and ye visited me not. Then shall they also answer him, saying, Lord, when saw we thee an hungered, or athirst, or a stranger, or naked, or sick, or in prison, and did not minister unto thee? Then shall he answer them, saying, verily I say unto you, inasmuch as ye did it not to one of the least of these, ye did it not to me. And these shall go away into everlasting punishment, but the righteous into life eternal. Two groups of people here. The first group had an inheritance in heaven. Why? They were commended for their love and compassion to those who were in need. The outworking of their love for Christ was evident. And it is clear here that they were not reaching out to others to blow their own horns or sound that cymbal. Because they asked Jesus, when did we even do these things that you're talking about? See, it was that response from the heart. They just did it because there was love there. They had a love and compassion that went far beyond their own selves. Jesus did not condemn them once for serving their own selves. Jesus saw a people who were concerned about the welfare of others. We have another group here that Jesus condemned. These people, he condemned these people seemingly because they were lovers of their own selves. They did not reach out to others in need. Their answer to him was, "We never saw any needs around us." You know, the eye of love sees those needs. But if we only have a love for ourselves, we're going to miss all the needs out there. We're going to miss the opportunities to reach out and help others who are striving for the kingdom. Where do we find ourselves this morning? Has love opened our eyes to others around us? Maybe it's even in our own homes. Or have we been guilty of seeking our own? And this could be applied in all of life. Number 8, another thing we see in 1 Corinthians 13 is love is not provoked. How easy is it for us to become provoked at others? Love is not irritated. It is not made sour or bitter. Love is never given to wrath, but rather love patiently endures all things, as verse 7 tells us. Love uses self-control to moderate the ill-will feelings that want to arise out of our carnal man. Proverbs 16:32 says, "He that is slow to anger is better than the mighty." Better than the mighty. "And he that ruleth his spirit than he that taketh a city." Anger is not God's way of taking care of issues. We could look at many examples of how Jesus reached out in love to others. I think James 1:19 should be our motto. "Wherefore, my beloved brethren, let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath." So if you face a trying situation sometime this week that would tend to irritate you, remember to be slow to speak, slow to wrath, swift to hear. This is a response of love to things that would otherwise provoke us to anger. Number 9, love thinks no evil. A person who truly loves will believe in the integrity of his brother without surmising or suspicions. For us to think evil of someone else, of our brother, is a violation of love. Love does not keep a running record of misdeeds and wrongdoings. Love forgives and chooses to remove evil thoughts of our brother from our mind. Proverbs 23:7 may help us evaluate ourselves. It says, "For as he thinketh in his heart, so is he." If we are thinking evil of someone else, it's revealing that we have a problem within our own hearts. If we are thinking evil of others, then love is absent from our lives. 2 Corinthians 10:5 says, "Casting down imaginations and every high thing that exalteth itself against the knowledge of God, and bringing into captivity every thought to the obedience of Christ." Oh, that we could have a thought life without reproach. A thought life that is in obedience to Christ. Number 10, love does not rejoice in iniquity, but in truth. Love does not rejoice over the failures of others. Love does not take delight when others are guilty of crime or when they fall into sin. Love does not find pleasure in hearing others being accused, whether it is a true or false accusation. Love does not take pleasure in hearing and repeating the faults of others. Love does not rejoice in iniquity. Rather, love rejoices in truth. Love rejoices in the virtues of others. It's pleased. It rejoices when they do well. When we are under this influence of God's love, we will rejoice in the advancement of others. When others excel and grow in their walk with God, it brings joy to our hearts, not jealousy and hatred. Do we ever fall into the sin of wishing bad on someone? Do we rejoice when something happens to them and we feel it serves them right? Let's remember, love rejoices not in the failures of our brother. Love will rejoice and encourage where it is due. Love never fails. Number 11. Just recapping all of what we talked about. This love that is being characterized here is something that will never fail because it comes from God. It bears, believes, hopes, and endures all things. If we think love fails, we need to look at ourselves, because Christ's love never fails. Love never fails, but too often we fail in presenting the love that we have available to us through Jesus. And in verse 8, it goes over the list of gifts that were mentioned in the beginning and states that all these gifts are subject to fail, but love never fails. Romans 13:10 says, "Love worketh no ill to his neighbor, therefore love is the fulfilling of the law." The same love which restrains us from evil incites us to all good, one writer wrote. That is why love fulfills the law. It doesn't do any ill. It just does good. John 13:35 says, "By this shall all men know that ye are my disciples, if ye have love one to another." Love is a true test of discipleship. It is love that affirms in people's minds that we've been with Jesus and that we are a disciple of Jesus. We are following Christ. I'd like to read a number of verses in 1 John yet, in closing. These verses basically speak for themselves, so I won't make much comment. 1 John chapter 3 and verses 10 to 18. "In this the children of God are manifest, and the children of the devil. Whosoever doeth not righteousness is not of God, neither he that loveth not his brother. For this is the message that ye heard from the beginning, that we should love one another. Not as Cain, who was of that wicked one, and slew his brother. And wherefore slew he him? Because his own works were evil, and his brother's righteous. Marvel not, my brethren, if the world hate you. We know that we have passed from death unto life, because we love the brethren. He that loveth not his brother abideth in death. Whosoever hateth his brother is a murderer, and ye know that no murderer hath eternal life abiding in him. Hereby perceive we the love of God, because he laid down his life for us, and we ought to lay down our lives for the brethren. But whoso hath this world's good, and seeth his brother have need, and shutteth up his bowels of compassion from him, how dwelleth the love of God in him? My little children, let us not love in word, neither in tongue, but in deed and in truth." Over to chapter 4 and verses 4 to 7. "Ye are of God, little children, and have overcome them, because greater is he that is in you than he that is in the world. They are of the world, therefore speak they of the world, and the world heareth them. We are of God. He that knoweth God heareth us. He that is not of God heareth not us. Hereby know we the spirit of truth and the spirit of error. Beloved, let us love one another, for love is of God, and everyone that loveth is born of God and knoweth God." love for our brethren, love for others is a real test of our love for God. Just a short poem yet. Love is an attitude. Love is a prayer for a soul in sorrow, a heart in despair. Love is good wishes for the gain of another. Love suffers long with the fault of a brother. Love gives water to a cup that's run dry. Love reaches low as it can reach high. Seeks not her own at the expense of another. Love reaches God when it reaches our brother. Let's kneel for prayer.